Welcome back to another episode of TrueNAS Tech Talk. It's release day for TrueNAS 25.10 Beta 1 Goldeye. So Chris and I have a laundry list of features and functionality and a whole bunch of technical goodies to discuss with you. There's lots to talk about today, so let's dive right in. Well, Chris, the Goldeye 25.10 beta just dropped today. There's a lot of exciting things in here, but let's let our enterprise customers know first. I mean, there's some really good things in there that are coming, and it's we've done a lot of work to make it enterprise ready in certain areas and enhance a lot of features there.
Absolutely. It's always exciting. Twice a year, we get to talk about big new releases happening, and it always kicks off in a big way with the beta. So this is a good one. We got a lot to get to today, so we're going to try and get it all in. But yeah, let's lead off with some of the enterprise things first. So first of all, on the enterprise side, one of the big new notables is virtual machines. VM support is now going to be considered an enterprise-ready feature for TrueNAS high availability systems, including support for failover. That's going to, of course, come in the normal due course after we get to the .0 and then enterprise customers start their uptake. But that's been a long time ask and something we've been looking forward to making more generally available on the enterprise side. In addition to that, some other things to talk about. Failover configs have been moved around. They're now under the advanced settings screen. So again, it's not something you do a whole lot of, so you don't necessarily need them front and center all the time. And then this one's actually pretty darn exciting too. NVMe over fabrics with RDMA, Rocky support. Good stuff. That's now landed in the enterprise product as well. So a nice alternative to your iSCSI. NVMe over fabrics is definitely the more modern alternative. We're expecting to see some nice little performance improvements there. So again, good things all around.
Yeah, and actually, for those of you who might be upset that NVMe over Fabric is staying in the enterprise, it's actually not. We are introducing NVMe over TCP in the community edition of Goldeye as well. So that is a great alternative to those of you who are currently using iSCSI or something to get that high performance. You'll be able to exceed that even further if you have a compatible NVMe initiator on your machines. I believe that's available on pretty much every distribution of Linux now. And there's even some Windows-based initiators if you do have some Windows machines in your environment that you are feeding direct block storage off of TrueNAS. But we've seen some people experimenting with it already internally. The bandwidth is pretty significantly improved in a lot of cases. And we actually even saw somebody say they saw latency improvements against a pool of spinning disks just by switching from iSCSI to NVMe. You know, we said
it makes sense, Chris.
Yeah.
It's a more modern protocol.
You're chopping out all of that SCSI latency. If you have less commands to have to wrap things around, it's going to be faster. It's going to turn around more quickly. Now, it's not necessarily going to make your hard drive pool perform like an NVMe device, but from the perspective of your client, it can queue up a lot more I/O against it because it believes that it's seeing a remote NVMe device. And in those cases where you're getting good results from your ZFS caching, you've got high performance log devices or, you know, really good prefetch happening, well, now you're reading and writing out of RAM effectively. So you do get a lot of that performance boost.
No, that's so really nice. We should mention before someone asked too, VMware supported this for a while also. Yep. So if you're plugging into a VMware cluster, you're good to go.
Yeah, Proxmox does as well for those of you who are on that side of the fence. I don't know about XCP. I'm going to have to check in on that. I don't know off the top of my head if they have NVMe target support. But
no, that's a welcome alternative. That's been one of those things, again, a long time coming. We've wanted to do it for a while now, and it's nice to see Block get a much needed, I guess, facelift, if you will, with some more modern protocol things. I mean, the SCSI standards, how many decades old at this point? So
it's pretty old.
This is good.
I have some pretty ancient SAS drives kicking around here. I think they are 73 gigabytes, and we are working to release 120 terabyte drives coming soon. So that protocol has been around for quite a while. But
okay. Speaking of things that give us some feedback, let us know your performance wins.
Yeah. Speaking of things that are getting updates, let's talk about the update system that we are giving quite an overhaul to in Goldeye. We are introducing a new redesigned update screen for here. It's going to allow users to select sort of an update profile. Now, we've had these available on the software status page, and we do recommend that you continue to, consult that page to figure out which, risk profile and sort of user type you are. But we've kind of made some distinctions on this that's going to streamline the update process, Chris. And it is going to differ a bit between community and enterprise, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, that's correct. This is another thing that's been a long time coming. The current system that's been around for quite a while now had some things like using trains and stuff that maybe wasn't immediately obvious what it means. And it means you have to take manual actions to go and switch to the new train when a new release comes out. We've vastly overhauled and simplified this now. So you just pick a profile, if you will, kind of your risk profile and what you want. So for example, on the enterprise side, you'll have general release or mission critical. Okay, kind of self-explanatory, right? There's two different kind of user profiles there for an enterprise system. Then on the community edition, you'll have the option for like early adopter or general release, which makes, again, a whole lot of sense. If you want to get into the early adopter train, you need new drivers, new features, new support, and you're that ambitious type, absolutely. You just hit a button. Now you start getting notified when the next early adopter release is available, or you stay on the general train, and that's when you'll get updates when we've deemed them ready for kind of general consumption. So it doesn't necessarily one-to-one correspond with point releases as well. We can set these arbitrary on our side. So we kind of watch the community uptake. We take a look at tickets and bugs and stability overall, and then we move things internally here from early adopter into the general category when it's ready.
Yeah, and we are going to add a developer profile at all as well. Yes. And that's going to be what gets you into those, the nightlies. If you are really sort of wanting to hack away at TrueNAS or use the leading edge stuff, you're maybe developing APIs or something against an upcoming version, then you'll want to be on that developer profile. But that's the kind of thing where perhaps you say, should I use this on my primary system? Probably not.
Yeah.
For your primary system
really know
at home.
What you're doing.
Yeah. Primary systems at home, keep them on the early adopter or general profiles there, and that will keep you nice and safe throughout the update process. As I understand, we're also going to have sort of a overall summary, so it won't be the full release notes available on that page, but we're going to try and give you a good, you know, kind of three-line sort of summary there of the major changes, the big things that are happening, what's been, you know, added support for something, or just things that we want to draw your attention to. And then we will, again, deep link into the release notes, so we do recommend that you check them out. Again, even with these new profiles of setting up between early adopter and general, make sure that you're looking into what is changing in the software before you just click the update button.
But let's be honest, we know most people don't go read or check or read notes and all that. So having more in-product kind of notices and information that gives you at least a fighting chance to glance at it and go, oh, yeah, that's interesting or relevant to me. I'm going to click the button. That's great. So again,
and it's still always going to be... It's still always going to be your choice to click that button. We're never going to force auto updating on people.
Yeah.
We want to keep that up to you to decide when you're ready to make that change.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We did some changes as well for certificates, certificate authorities, and more SSL signing requests as well, right, Chris?
Yeah, we did. Absolutely.
Now I think if I'm understanding the commits here, we're removing the ability of TrueNAS to be a certificate authority. Mm-hmm. And that was something that people had kind of ad hoc into their environment to say, you know, I'm going to make TrueNAS be the signing authority in my environment. That's probably something that maybe wasn't a real best practice. You know, we're a storage company. We're not a CA company.
Yeah, yeah. There's lots of ways to go get a proper CA and get something signed and then just apply it to your storage, not making TrueNAS be the thing. It was kind of like the TrueNAS being the domain controller back in the day when that got retired. Like, yeah, that's not really a good role for your storage appliance.
Yeah. And you're still going to be able to import any certificates that you create from an external certificate authority. So if you're using it in a small business environment and you have an external CA, you can, of course, import one that you signed outside of TrueNAS, bring it in, and then you'll have that nice, comfortable SSL lock going on. There's also, we're also working with, you know, the ACME certificate process as well. So if you add a DNS authenticator, you can actually get it self-signed through the ACME process, correct?
That's correct. That is correct. And we'll have some other things to talk about with certs in the very near future as well that'll even make it, I think, easier than what we're describing here. So there's some good stuff happening in this space because it's 2025. We want all the things to be security on all the time and with valid certificates whenever possible. Because even browsers today don't like self-signed certs. They're going to nag you to death.
And they keep reducing the validity of SSL cert times. I understand there's a further reduction coming. And so anything that we might be able to possibly do on the back end that makes it a whole lot easier for your SSL renewals, that's probably beneficial.
Yeah, that's where we want to get to at the end of the day, where it's just an afterthought. It's just assumed You're always going to have a good cert. It's always going to be valid. It's being renewed. You just don't sweat it. Those are the details you don't want to have to think about all the time.
Exactly. We're playing with the user screen is getting some refresh as well, correct?
That's right. We got a kind of a work in progress, new refreshed user screen that's there in addition to the original, but we're looking for some feedback on this one specifically. It's really an attempt to, at a glance, simplify a lot of the information and simplify the whole user creation story around a more storage-centric purpose. So one of the things that, you know, again, people who've been around a long time knows is there's kind of a lot of like Unix and Linux legacy sysadmin-y type things and concepts in the UI, which works and doesn't work. You know, it works until it doesn't in some ways. There's a lot of people who don't necessarily want to be Linux admins or Unix admins, and it's a storage device. So we're trying to bring all the storage capabilities of your user management up front and center. So it means when you go and do creation, it's going to be more focused on things like, hey, is this a user you want for SMB NFS? Yes or no? Is this a user you want to be able to do things like administrate the system? SSH? Do they need shell access? Just very easy to go click a box, type a username, password in, and move on and kind of get back to the business at hand, as opposed to saying, I got to set all these kind of traditional Linux profile settings that may not have any relevance to what your actual end user is doing. Yeah.
No more schmods and octal settings of there with your, you know, number, the magical number codes.
That's right.
I think everybody will be happy to get a little bit more of a storage focused user creation process. We're also making some changes to the data sets and the storage dashboard screens as well. We're renaming some of those data set and pool widgets. So I'll have to, again, kind of reprogram my mind to go, it used to be called, you know, what, device topology, device configuration. Mm-hmm. We'll all have to figure that one out again, but it's going to be under the data sets and the storage screens. The scrub tasks, that's one thing that we should probably call out. That's moving from data protection underneath there to go to the storage health widget on the new storage dashboard.
Well, it's kind of a philosophy thing that we're trying to adopt here, which is this whole idea of you're having to define tasks, which really are just warmed up cron jobs in the olden days, right? And we're trying to get away from people having to think in terms of, well, I need to go create a job or a task to do a thing. No, it's your storage health. This is where you monitor it. It's going to take care of things. Again, we want to make it smarter and more intelligent so the right things are just happening automatically in the background wherever possible. So you'll see this trend continue in future Shunaz releases. But again, it's a good general cleanup. It does mean you're going to have to reprogram your brain a bit on where you were used to clicking. But I think an overall welcome change.
Yeah. Well, let's dig into a little bit of some apps changes here. I know we've had this longstanding error about NVIDIA UUIDs for slots. That has to do with the Docker trying to identify that GPU rather than pinning it to a particular PCIe slot. We think we got this one this time, actually, and I think we're trying to do some additional legwork behind the scenes for when that UUID does change, whether it's for a hardware swap or a device driver reinstall. So, I mean, do we have anything more we can sort of show about how we're making this magic work, Chris?
Yeah, in the background, we just have the middleware keeping a better tab on which device goes where, and then being able to update the Docker config silently. Again, it's about making it smarter, so we're not making you have to overthink and go track these things manually. If the system already knows, oh, it's the same GPU, it's just jumped around locations, or again, you reinstalled the driver, now it's got a different UID, we're just going to pass it through because 99.9% of the time, that's what you were going to have to manually do anyway. So it's just about doing those things automatically for you.
Yeah, it might not work perfectly if you're physically changing the card that's in there, you know, because then it'll say, hey, you just swapped from this card to another.
Yeah, it's different now.
Yeah. Do you really want to reassign that to the same ones? And maybe you do. Maybe it's a straight upgrade, but we want you to be conscious of that and confirm it. But speaking of NVIDIA changes, there is kind of there's a big shift that's happened in 25.10. It was something that we kind of hinted at the possibility of it coming before, but because of NVIDIA has started making a shift from their closed source drivers to a new open source variant, it's dual license under MIT. And is it a GPL V2 or V3?
Yeah. No, V2, because it's got to be kernel compatible.
Okay, so it's a GPL V2 driver. So we have started adding the new open source variant of the kernel module. Now, there's some pluses and minuses with this one. The pluses is we get to support the NVIDIA 50 series based on the Blackwell chips. We've had a lot of people come into the forums asking when we're going to support those because they've grabbed something like a 5060 Ti with 16 gigs of VRAM, and they're trying to experiment with AI things, and they find out, hey, it's not actually supported. The reason is that NVIDIA requires that open source kernel module to make the Blackwell chips work. Unfortunately, the open source kernel module actually deprecates and makes the older cards, some of them, totally stop working. So anything that lacks that GPU system processor, so anything before the Turing generation, that is your GTX 16 series and your RTX 2000 or 20 series, they are unfortunately no longer compatible. So that means we get to press F to pay respects to our legendary GTX 1080. It will not be supported in TrueNAS 25.10. I have three cards myself that are going to be hit by this, Chris. I have a P400. I've talked about those before on the show as good low-cost transcoding cards. I got a couple of Tesla P4s I'm going to have to rehome somewhere and say, unfortunately, they won't be able to do any CUDA duties in 25.10.
What are those, 10 years old at this point, Chris? Is that roughly?
I think it was May 2016 was when the 10 series first dropped. It's had a good run, but I'll be quite honest. I mean, for the processing powers for things like video decode, you're way better off in terms of like a value per dollar and, power per watt, transcodes per watt, getting something like the little A310 cards, especially with that previous episode showing somebody who figured out how to fix the fan ramping on that low profile single slot model. Probably going to grab one of those myself for my Mini R and throw it in there if I don't need the SFP slots.
No, I get it. Again, it's a little frustrating because I know a lot of folks definitely build TrueNAS kind of with spare parts they have around, and they use older retired things. But 10 years has been a long run, so it is probably time to go ahead and think about that next upgrade in storage. That still is quite a while.
Yeah. Well, back onto, I guess, some of the new features that we're adding as opposed to the old ones that are going away. We're adding some more directory services authentication for FTP for those of you who want to use FTP as the means of accessing your TrueNAS.
There's a few sure still out there.
I'm sure there's dozens of you. Literally dozens.
All dozens of you. Yep.
Yeah. For VMs, we're adding secure boot back to the virtual machines in the what we called it virtualization classic. I believe that's inherited from the later Fangtooth releases. We had secure boot showed up there. But we've also added VNC and SPICE as remote display options. Yeah. So
you get both choices now, which that's kind of a big win. Again, I think we've discussed this on previous episodes. SPICE is one of those things where it should have been the protocol that won. It's technically better all on paper, but in reality, few people like it. There's not very many good clients for it. It's a lot of people just want their tried and true VNC. Heck, I'm one of them. It's easier to work with, in my opinion. So nice to have both options available so you can actually deploy both on a VM and then again, use the one that makes most sense for you.
Hey, we're kind of bouncing around a little bit, but we also did an update for apps that allows you to automatically migrate your apps configurations between pools. So if you started out your build with hard drives and you've now said, hey, I want to add a few SSDs and make an apps pool, we can now do the automatic migration of all of your apps there. Of course, if you've set up bind mounts to actual volumes, those won't migrate. We're not going to move it from your hard drive pool to your SSD pool. But things like if they're set up as IX volumes, you'll be able to sort of move the main container and the running app itself will go there.
Yeah, that's good. A little convenience thing for people who do have those dual pool, spinning drives and then a flash pool set up and they need to be able to move apps between them. So it's been a while, but we've wanted to get that in. And then additionally, speaking of apps, one of the other things is external container registry mirrors. So you have alternative sources of where you want to pull those Docker images from, which is very nice. So again, another nice convenience feature for people heavy into the app space.
Yep. We also tweaked a bit of the custom YAML creation process as well. That'll help out those who are doing things like trying to install TrueNAS on ARM in the last one. I think people have said, hey, if you create a custom YAML, if it's got a Docker image, just change it from Linux AMD64 to Linux ARM64. Now, I don't know if our good friend Joel has set up the GoldenEye build process yet for ARM, but you know, so please don't bother him on that. You know, if you want to go help him, absolutely help him out. But that's just something that'll be beneficial for the tweaking there.
Yep. And then, of course, some ZFS goodies to go along with this release. So there's been some stability things, performance improvements, some issues fixed with corruptions of plain text replication of encrypted snapshots. So that's an important one. Enhanced memory pressure handling. That's always welcome to see. Faster pool export, which you probably don't do that often, but nice when you need it. Some more I/O scaling capabilities, and then ZFS rewrite. We should talk a little bit about that here in a moment, and some other direct I/O support stuff. But first of all, let's get into ZFS rewrite, because that's kind of a net new. I think a lot of people maybe haven't heard of this one yet. We did discuss it in a previous episode. Maybe you did or didn't catch that. But it does have its limitations, but it's a way of basically rewriting ZFS data in place on the system. You know, things you used to go grab a script to go and move data around anytime you've changed topologies or layouts or want to rebalance, ZFS rewrite's now your best friend.
Exactly. You can use this to switch things like the compression algorithm you're using on there. If you're expanding with RAID Z expansion or you've added a whole new VDEV, it's going to kind of rewrite your files in place. And from what I understand, this is actually, it's not hooking in right down at the record. It's hooking in at a different level than some of the user created rebalance scripts, which basically work by copying the file at the top level. So you don't have an exclusive lock on that file. So something that changes the file while you're copying it, well, those changes might be lost as a result of this script. You know, yes, some of them do the hashing before and after to make sure that doesn't happen. But in this case, the ZFS rewrite is working at a different level of ZFS. And you can actually, as far as I understand this, use this on an active share with even open writes to the files. And it will change them, you know, rebalance them across VDEVs. And rebalance them within the VDEVs in the case of RAID Z expansion. It still does have the limitations of operating at, you know, above the block level of the disk, in that if you have snapshots in place, you are still going to get that double allocation challenge. So we wouldn't recommend, you know, trying to rebalance an entire pool that's 80% full. You might run out of space or have some space thrashing going on, especially if you have really, really big files. But if you've just sort of grown your pool a little bit, it's not quite full yet, you'll be able to sort of level it out fairly easily. Or if you've added a whole new empty VDEV in order to grow that space, it should be able to sort of make better use of that, balance things out. You might even get some sort of quasi defrag implementation here, because you're effectively reading all the records of a file and then trying to stripe them back into a more contiguous block.
Yeah. That was what we joked about internally. Finally, ZFS grows a defrag capability. Again, it's not really that, but it does function in place of that in many ways. So it's good. It's great.
It's kind of a side effect. It's kind of a side effect of it. Unfortunately, it doesn't work on Zvols. It is still only for data sets. So don't go thinking you can, you know, defrag the underlying disk of a VM. It unfortunately doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of like the memory pressure changes we did. I know we saw a couple people reporting they would occasionally see, you know, an out of memory kind of condition, or especially when they were running a bunch of virtual machines.
Yeah.
So we've changed some of the sort of the ZFS arc behavior to say, you know, be a little bit more gracious when virtual machines are running to prevent an out of memory condition. And as well, I think there's a fix that got put in. I'll see if I can find the GitHub and put it in the description, but it had to do with speeding up the arc eviction. And it's a strange thing to say that this can be a bottleneck, but you actually have to have it make that decision really quickly and be able to evict arc space when it sees memory pressure.
Pressure and also parallel arc eviction as well is very important. So that was another feature that went in recently. So more threads doing that work.
Exactly. You can use more than one core to evict your arc. It's fantastic.
Turns out it's important. You got to get that memory out fast to get the new stuff in.
Exactly.
So yeah, related to that, it's basically there was insufficient memory pressure being applied previously on the arc when VMs were saying, I need more RAM, I'm consuming more memory. And so ZFS will now respect that more correctly and free up memory quicker in the process. So again, good. That's actually part of that enterprise readiness, getting things ready for being able to run VMs more generally. So again, good feature to have.
Yeah. for some VMs as well. The VMs that are on the container screen, we've temporarily disabled the auto start for those, correct? Just yeah. as part of sort of this migration of things over to the ones on our new on the virtualization tab, just in case that you've maybe migrated a machine or you did a sort of a manual copy. We don't obviously want both the Incus powered and the Libvirt powered ones trying to boot up on the same Zvol. That's not going to end well.
Yeah, that's a path to hilarity and not in a funny way. Yeah. So yeah, let's not do that.
It's laughing because your alternative is crying.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we had that. We also had some good SMB changes. You know, let's not forget about that. So access-based enumeration for SMB shares with the NFSv4 ACL types. So that means directory listings will only show files that the users actually are going to have permissions to read. That's nice. This
is actually a big one that people have requested. They said, if we use, sometimes people want to use a single SMB share as, you know, the root of the user home directory, but they want to control visibility by permission. Yeah. So they say, hey, when you go to your home dir, you'll only see yourself. You won't see a full listing of everybody in the org or, you know, even mm-hmm. in a smaller sense, you won't see everybody in the families. You know, I'll say, mm-hmm. hey, my kids have one. I've got one. Now we can't, you know, we could never access it, but now we can't even see it. And that's beneficial. I understand we did some work on the back end to really improve sort of the performance of looking up all of the ACLs. Yeah. And that's what made this really, really possible to turn that on.
Yeah, again, long time request. Good to see it finally land and be in the fall release here. In addition to that, some other things on the SMB side, the auto RID ID map backend option has been removed. We're trying to improve some consistency when you have multiple server environments. Anybody using auto RID is going to be migrated to RID during upgrades. Just a heads up.
Yeah. I think we improved some of those templates for the SMB shares as well. Like we had some that were for, they said regular share, default user, time machine. We sort of fixed up some of the advanced options and the little tick boxes there. So hopefully mm-hmm. these templates will get a little bit more use. I know we see people that usually they're just making the default ones, but it's worth checking into them to see if they tick off the particular features that you need on yours.
Yeah, yeah. If there's something that looks approximately like what you want, you might save yourself some headache and time having to go figure out the particulars. A lot of times the preset's just the way to go. It's already set up out of box.
Yeah. I know one other thing that people might notice is we've removed one of the smart UIs in there, and we've replaced it with sort of some automatic tasks that are in there. Is that's correct?
That's correct. This goes back to that theme I mentioned earlier, Chris, about this idea of getting away from everything needs to be a custom user-defined task that you have to go schedule and pick a time for things to run at. Same thing with Smart. That's how it was before. You had to go define a job and set it up and when does it run, blah, blah, blah. We don't really need to do that. We can get a little more intelligent in the software and set that up to all just kind of happen automatically in the back end. It's one less thing you have to remember during the setup of a true NAS. And one less mistake you could make if you don't do it right. So in the background now, Smart's going to be automatically monitoring your drives, reporting alerts. It does that all on its own internal schedules. It's fine. And then in addition to that, you still have access to the tools. And if you want to go run things manually, of course, you can always go do that on demand. That's fine. If you have existing tasks that are scheduled on the box, those will be migrated to cron jobs during the upgrade. So again, we're not removing that. If you want to go disable it, again, you may not need it. It's redundant now. If the system's already doing it, you have the option to go kill that cron job after the upgrade. So please go take a look at that. But going forward, that'll just make it a lot easier for the system to just do the right thing. And it'll alert you when we do detect a condition that needs your attention. And then in addition, in the app catalog, of course, a while back, we added the scrutiny app, which is a pretty nice, also graphical interface if you want to do some more advanced things with smart monitoring as well. So check that out if you haven't yet.
Yeah, I use that one myself. I only really go to the CLI for smart stuff if I'm, you know, digging into raw stats or wanting to play with counters or, you know, show off just how many writes my poor SSDs have endured and they're still ticking along.
Yep.
Yeah. What else do we add here? We did some API changes. We've finally completed the transition to our versioned API. This is a pretty big thing as well for you know, our developer kind of crowd, whether it's our, you know, the hobbyists and people working at home or people looking to connect sort of the plumbing of TrueNAS into external systems, whether it's a, you know, a hypervisor or just sort of programmatically deploying it using something like an Ansible, Puppet, or Chef.
Yeah, we've been talking about this one for a little while now, more than a year, but it's been coming. It's finally out. We're excited to see this land. Everything's JSON RPC 2.0 over WebSockets. We have great new sites set up, by the way, api.truenas.com, which you should check out if you're anybody who's using or touching APIs. One of the things I will mention here is some people are like, oh, well, you know, how do I write scripts for it? The format's a little different. Pro tip, AI is really powerful and good at writing scripts using known APIs. So you can happily go throw your AI of choice, your TrueNAS API documentation, point it at those calls, and it'll happily generate scripts in pretty much whatever language you want. So you want to do curl commands, all that. You can find ways to do that. It set up Python scripts. I've done Golang versions of it. It's quite good. So anywho, if that's going to be the type of thing you want to do and you want to drive your TrueNAS around in a more automated fashion, again, go take a look. We also have reference clients available. There's a Python reference client. We have a Go-based client as well. You can take a look at if you want to see examples or code examples. Those are all available up on GitHub. So again, happy playing around with that. Hopefully people enjoy the new interfaces.
Exactly. And even for those of you who aren't developers, the new change to the API, you're actually going to see some benefits from it right when you upgrade to GoldEye, because all of our own middleware drives through that same API. And the new one is much, much faster. Just tooling around with it, even on the nightlies when it was first implemented, I was kind of second guessing myself going, did this actually work? Because no, it just was that much more responsive. So it's going to be way quicker. Let us know if you see those changes when you're upgrading to GoldEye. You might notice that, hey, everything is just seems an awful lot snappier in the UI. It's going to be much, much more responsive. So even if you're not a developer, you're going to benefit from all of this hard work behind the scenes.
Yeah, again, it's those little behind the scene details that just add up to a more streamlined user experience. It'll feel better while you're navigating around the UI. So give that a shot and let us know. Another thing that got added recently was we enhanced the drive temp kernel modules to include SCSI and SAS disk temperatures. So some of that information is now going to be available as well, which is pretty nice. And again, convenience things, maybe not everyone notices, but it's there.
Yeah, they do report their temperature in a different way than, you know, SATA drives or NVMe drives. So it's good to see that we're really trying to cover all the bases here. There are a couple things that are... you know, there's some known issues at this point. It is still a beta after all. You know, we've been talking about all these great new features, but we are still in the very first release of it. So there's some issues with sorting the cloud sync tasks as far as the sort for frequency. That's not working correctly quite at this moment. There's still an issue with the users page. If you have invalid email addresses in your users, like if you've assigned them an invalid or a non-correct, non-parsable email address.
Bad syntax.
Bad syntax. You know, go into your users page if possible and try to correct those, remove them, fix them, however you have to do that before you upgrade to GoldEye. Otherwise, it could have issues with sort of parsing those when it gets to the user page, and it'll throw up an error in its place. Virtual machines, we're still sort of doing some polish on that. We are working on things like disk image import and export as well for sort of portability and the ease of grabbing things like, you know, canned OVAs or stuff like that. It's not fully implemented. So it is something that this is a beta stage. You shouldn't expect it to be perfectly flawless, but absolutely, if you're willing to test it, let us know if you can figure out, you know, what breaks it and what works perfectly.
Yeah, no, that last one's going to be important, Chris, being able to import and export, because it means you can basically take those images you get from elsewhere and pull them into a ZVol, which is where you really want them for performance reasons and all the other things that ZFS brings to the table, as opposed to running it as a file somewhere on a data set. So keep an eye out for that. That's important. I expect that one's probably going to land in the RC here next month, though, so not too long.
Exactly. Well, that was a real long discussion about all the cool stuff in GoldEye. So we did put out a blog earlier sort of teasing about it, and we wanted to talk about one thing that GoldEye is not. So we had a lot of discussion that got spawned from us discussing this new web-driven installer that's going to be notably an option for GoldEye. We are working on something in the back that's going to allow you to basically put a USB drive with bootable copy of the TrueNAS installer of 25.10 into a machine. And at that point, it's going to sort of advertise itself, and you'll be able to use a sort of a web portal to connect to it and complete your setup and your installation that way. Yeah. A lot of people got worried. They said, hey, is this the first step towards, you know, a mandatory cloud tie, you know, having to cloud license or cloud activate your TrueNAS system? The short answer is no. The long answer is no. We are not doing that. It's not happening. You saw my comment on Reddit, and I'm going to state it again here. If we do that, I'll fork the code myself.
There you go. There you go. No, again, it's about options and convenience for people. Again, not everybody has IPMI or wants to go drag a keyboard and monitor over just to go through a text-based console install. It's annoying. So part of this is about modernization and giving people more options. So one of the things the web install will do for you is, if you want to, and especially if you're on a network where MDNS works and you can find the system, you can now drive it entirely through the web interface, which means things like, again, we talked about everything being over SSL in 2025. SSL certs are set up automatically, valid certificates. You can then just point and click and go, and you don't have to go and actually physically touch a box and attach a keyboard and mouse, or not a mouse in this case, but a keyboard and monitor, to be able just to hit enter a few times and type your password and all that. Now, granted, we always have to have that option because a lot of people do offline installs. And frankly, the web installer is not something you would use in the data center. So it's not something necessarily our enterprises would use either. But again, it's about giving people more options and convenience and lowering the bar and the barrier of entry for people who just want to say, I want this to be plug and play and easy. That's a modern convenience that I don't think is a bad thing. So looking forward to having it out. Heck, I'd use it myself. It's great if it's convenient. It's one less step I have to worry about.
Yeah. Again, thank you for, you know, we're going to clear that up and we're going to double down on it. We're not cloud locking TrueNAS. Mm-hmm. It's not happening. Yep. But since we're talking about updates and DNS and cloud locking and things like that, I did want to throw out one thing that has been brought to our attention earlier this week, and apparently it's been sort of dogging people for the past couple months. Currently, we have some issues with multiple users in different countries in the European Union. They are having issues downloading TrueNAS, whether it's the ISO or the update, and they've noticed things like, hey, all my app icons disappeared. It turns out the root cause of this is some anti-piracy measures that have been put in place in several EU member states. So far, we've had confirmed reports out of France, Italy, and Spain. Mm-hmm. The apparent root cause of this is that there are some laws over there that seem to be very in favor of media rights holders. And, you know, to make it clear, you're allowed to protect your own copywritten material. You're allowed to, you know, prevent people from restreaming a pirated, you know, football stream. But what's happening is that the ISPs are being told they have 30 minutes to comply with the requests of these rights holders to block a stream. So what they're doing is they are using very broad strokes when they are applying these IP bans. And they've not only hit our CDNs, they have hit Cloudflare CDNs, they have hit Google CDNs. We have had reports of entire countries basically being unable to access things like Google Drive, Google Photos, and even, you know, components of other websites that break down, like Google Fonts. Anybody who's leveraging that, all of a sudden they're thrown back into, you know, the 1990s GeoCities HTML pages, where all of your text is completely unformatted and running all over the page. So now I believe, Chris, we are working on some stuff in the background to try and get like either it's, you know, regional specific updates or geo distributed updates. You know, I've got a few gigabits of upload here.
Yeah.
If we want to set up a torrent,
I think it's going to be torrents short term, just to provide an alternative. So if, again, you do find yourself blocked at your ISP for some reason from being able to reach our CDN, and again, we could even switch CDNs, it doesn't necessarily mean the problem goes away. Again, you saw how broad that is, which is just ridiculous on the face of it. But I think having the backup torrents is probably going to be the way to go. So we're going to be working on that here and see if we can get those online before too long for people who do need to be able to reach out and grab that ISO file or the update file, which you can then download and, you know, upload to the web UI. Again, inconvenient, but not something that we did or caused. And it's annoying us as much as it is you. Make sure you are complaining and voicing your opinion if you're in one of the affected countries.
Absolutely. You know, write your members of government and tell them this is ridiculous. It's, you know, blocking perfectly legitimate internet traffic. And in this case, for those of you who have some bandwidth to spare and you want to help us out and you want to help out those who might be stuck behind a metaphorical great firewall, you know, this is your chance to actually be sharing a Linux ISO.
There you go. Wow, that's not a joke anymore. That's legit.
We're actually being unironic with this one. It's time to share those Linux ISOs, people.
Well, great. Well, thanks, Chris. This has been awesome. We've had a lot of content to go over here today. Again, we only get to do this a couple times a year. We get to go over just kind of a smorgasbord of new features and functionality when we have a new release about to drop. So the beta is going out while we're recording this, actually. This is Thursday. You'll be seeing this on Friday. So again, there's going to be a lot of noise about this the next few days. Keep an eye on the forums, Reddit, all the usual places. We're really looking forward to getting that feedback, and it's super important and vital that you get us that feedback sooner rather than later, so we have time to get fixes and things addressed in the RC1 and then the .0. But again, a hats off and thank you to everybody who does participate in this phase of the software development process. It is much appreciated.
And thank you to you and your team behind the scenes doing all this crazy engineering work to give us all of these fantastic new features to talk about, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all for today. It's been a long episode, very tech deep, but this is TrueNAS Tech Talk after all. Feel free to continue submitting any questions you might have, whether they're about GoldEye or anything else, to t3@truenas.com. Jump in the comment section down below the video or join us on the TrueNAS community forums. Again, please do those usual YouTube things for us. Give us a video a like, give us a subscription if you want to catch all the latest updates, and then we'll see you next week.